welcome to the first live episode of We the People Radio in 2023.
Here we are. We made it.
It's the 8th of January. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Go up and see them if you're looking for a tractor or a mower or implements, whatever. They got a great inventory right now. A yard's filling up. Go up and see them and make a deal. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call at 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. Yeah, they got some great deals right now on tractors. You can get 0% financing. A lot of good things happening right now. So go up and see them.
Well, can't say that about everywhere.
No.
You know, there's not always a lot of good things going on, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. There we go. All right. Well, you might have noticed the website is different. I tried to make it kind of the same, but it's different. So you may have little challenge finding things. On that front page there, I put this week's show. If you click on that, it'll always take you to the page for today. And you can always find it in the archives as well. I've got the archive listing for today linked. So, yeah, the people we were running the site through decided it couldn't be more than 500 pages. And, oh, by the way, they can't upgrade it. So rather than upgrade 500 pages, I cheated off of Robert, who does our archives. God bless him. So thanks, Robert, for doing that. And they're all on there for you. Collaborative effort, you know. Normally collaboration's a bad thing, but in this particular case, it worked out. So, today we thought we'd start out with sort of political, but not exactly. We thought we'd start out with a political show that was about being productive. What a great idea.
Yeah, I didn't know those two went hand in hand.
I know. It's kind of confusing, isn't it?
Yeah.
We decided...
we don't have to vote on it, do we?
No. With the backdrop of the clown show, we thought we'd do something productive. And it turns out that I know Mark from like almost 10 years ago. We did some teaching back in Virginia when I was involved with the Tea Party, and he was involved with the Center for Self-Governance, which he still is. And... We had all never met. We had a great time. We might have, we might have gone out, had a beer or something, a bunch of us. And I think there was a Waffle House involved at around, 2 o'clock in the morning. It was really funny after all this time, though. It's like, was that you? It's like, was that you? Pretty funny. So you never know where you'll meet people or where they'll pop back up again. But a little bit about Mark, just because he's got kind of a neat background. He is retired U.S. Air Force. Thank you for that. And lives in Washington State, Chesaw, Washington, with his wife, Pam, and children. Mark's the president and co-founder of the Center for Self-Governance, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan political education and leadership organization. And I forgot to look at when they were formed, but I know it was at least 10 years ago. He's an author, a film producer, a policy writer, and a political strategist and instructor. His political innovations are hailed as 21st century groundbreaking, cutting edge, and self-empowering by elected officials, business entrepreneurs, and parents nationwide. So this isn't just for people who, you know, want to run for Congress. This could be people who want to make a difference at their school board level. And so kind of hits everybody, and they do a really, really nice job. So that's all I know, and it's back to Mark. There we go.
Yeah, you're on your own.
We've exhausted my information. So, except for the Waffle House deal, I'm out.
Yeah, Waffle House. They got to do that again sometime. Those are good times.
It was really funny. It's like, are you the guy from the Waffle House run?
Yeah. Hey, I wasn't the brawl that just happened a couple days in the Waffle House.
I'm just going to mention that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. By the way, we were really nice in the Waffle House.
Got out alive without getting hit
with
a chair.
We were nice. We left it cleaner than we found it.
Yeah. To say we were not drinking and went to a Waffle House, that does sound bad. That makes it sound like we were YouTube material.
That's right. This was a Waffle House with a bar.
Hey,
Waffle House, if you're listening.
Yeah, free advertisement of the day goes to Waffle House.
There you go. Brought to you by vodka. I'm just kidding.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that was really fun, though. But those guys in Virginia, they were in the process of flipping Eric Cantor out of his seat back then.
Yes, way back in the day. The first time in history that a majority leader for the GOP had been unseated as an incumbent.
Yeah.
It was pretty epic.
That was groundbreaking. It was fun to be involved in that. They did that huge conference. I don't remember how many groups they brought in, but they brought in groups from all different states. And I think I went back there two or three times. It was really fun. I love teaching at those things.
Oh, yes. It's great to connect with people around the country and figure out what self-governance means and how do we self-govern. Seems to be, in our organization has experienced that self-governance is the first step that we have to take as a culture if we want to save our country.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to disagree. The problem is most people don't know, you know, it's like they don't know how to get on the yellow brick road, right? Where does it start?
Yes, right.
We'd love to go to the Emerald City, but we really just don't know how to get there.
Yeah. I think that the pathway to self-governance starts with understanding what it means. There's two different versions of self-governance. The first is, I do whatever I want. I'm gay, or I'm straight, or I'm Christian, or I'm young and I just want to be free, or you know what I mean, all that stuff. It's that version of self-governance. The other version is where you have to govern yourself first before governing others. And we seem to, our culture seems to be a little bit lacking on that side of the definition of self-governance right now.
Yeah, we're not really promoting that like we used to.
No, it's, but it's coming back into blossom. Every political cycle has a season, right? It's we're blossoming self-governance again, and people are inquiring. Both sides of the political aisle, Democrats, Republicans, everybody, and so supposedly in the middle, are kind of clamoring for what is self-governance and how do we self-govern? I mean, even it's interesting. Even Jeffries, the minority leader for Congress, when he gave an interview, I think this morning or last night, basically says, you know, these people who've taken over and their rules and stuff are going to affect our self-government. And I'm just like, you know, it'd be really cool if we could sit down at the table and say, well, what exactly do you mean by self-government?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What does it mean? And I think that's the first step. What does it mean? And before we can answer, how do we do it? You know what I mean? What
yeah.
does it mean?
It's one of those terms when I had first heard the name of your organization, it's sort of like deceptively simple, but often confused.
Right?
You know?
Yeah. Right now with, Chip Roy, one of the holdouts for McCarthy, got on CNN, again, last night or this morning, I'm not for sure.
Still fundraising,
Right? Still fundraising. And he basically said this is what democracy looks like, because they were really, you know, hammering him pretty hard for what they did with this whole McCarthy. What is it? Is it a fiasco? What was that?
Well, when you show up and want somebody else, but you don't actually have somebody else, that sort of looks like you went off half-cocked.
Didn't exactly have a plan. I mean, a full plan.
Yeah,
they just knew what they didn't want, and let's just stop.
Yeah, this is
the
what
bus.
We don't want, so there we go. It's like, well, you need more than that. So what are you hearing in your area, just out of curiosity?
Well, I got to tell you, so from a self-governance perspective, where you govern yourself first before governing others, you know, what we see in the media and our impression of what happens, I would say it was probably one of the best. It's one of the best chess moves, I think, in U.S. history. But let me explain. So what did they got all these amazing rules, packages, things, and that's what the Jeffries was complaining about in his interview, is like, this is these extreme MAGA Republicans affect our national security, and are affecting the average American. And we have to fight against this extremism. But what exactly did these 20 people get as they went through what I'm going to label, and maybe, Aaron, it's not, I mean, maybe, it, I don't know if it's apparent to most people. I don't know. But what I get out of what happened is just a brilliant chess move. The results are is that Congressman Jim Jordan will be the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. And McCarthy agreed to create a select committee that they are nicknaming the Church Committee. And the Church Committee is based off of the essentially the committees from the 1970s that were investigating the deep state, if you want to call, I don't know what else to call it, the deep state, CIA, DHS, DOJ, sure. FBI, and their weaponization. So they have agreed to this. McCarthy has agreed to this. And that's huge for all Americans. And of course, Jeffries comes out and he belittles that agenda. He's not belittling the other parts of the rules package. The main part that he's belittling is the select committee that's going to investigate with broad jurisdiction the weaponization of the federal government. And if you read through House Resolution 118 and go through that details, I just, on behalf of my students from across this nation, after 13 years of studying the weaponization of labels in government, I can't stress enough how important it is that that committee exists and that it has broad jurisdictional authority to identify the weaponization of the federal government against all Americans. And Jeffries essentially came out to criticize that as extreme. And so I'm just trying to say, beyond the circus that took place, the benefit to the American people, in my organization's opinion, is the creation of that select committee so that we can bring some checks and balances back into Congress between them and the President of the United States and the executive branch that has a lot of executive departments that are doing a lot of crazy stuff to Americans, whether they're ranchers in Northern California or whether there are thousands of parents who've been cited in trespass for showing up at school boards in this last year. It really doesn't matter who you are as an American. Those entities have been weaponized for some reason, and it's important for Congress to get down to get to the bottom of it.
Well, I think there was a lot of interest in doing that anyway. I'm not really sure. Did we have a big coalition that was against that?
Yes.
Enough to change it?
Enough to ensure that it didn't have the Church Committee powers of the 70s.
Okay.
And that's the critical piece. The critical piece is that the broad jurisdiction. Because the speaker and the rules, when they craft that rules package, they can limit the jurisdiction of those select committees, and that's huge because it's separate from the Judiciary Committee,
sure,
but tied to future Chairman Jordan's control of the Judiciary Committee. So, just lots to pay attention to be a part of. I would encourage people who feel that they have been victimized by bureaucratic bullying of any of those federal entities to write an affidavit in one page to describe what, why, and how it happened, and send that to Congress as soon as possible.
So
from ranchers of Northern California,
yeah,
to parents across the United States.
So when they look into the weaponization of say the DOJ. And they find that, yeah, they were out of line, they did a lot of bad things, and so on and so forth. What can they do about it? Because ultimately, doesn't it go back to the DOJ to be investigated?
It depends. There's two pathways. First of all, we've got to understand that our system of government is designed with checks and balances, and those checks and balances are being eliminated. So this select committee reopens that conversation about checks and balances.
Mm-hmm.
right? They weaponized the January 6th committee against the president, the previous president, and then they tried to impeach him twice. And you're like, that is really extreme. It's never been done before in U.S. history to that level of effort. And where are those things coming from? So it's really important that our Congress, our representative body that makes the law, has oversight over what is that and where is that coming from? Why are parents being labeled domestic terrorist extremist? Why are attorney generals in the states introducing commissions, the idea of commissions to their legislators? Why are they doing that? So that is a huge component of the congressional purpose, to bring things to the light, to have the debate, and then introduce solutions with action. Mm-hmm. The second piece is that Congress is broken into two parts, the House and the Senate. The House is where, for example, all the impeachment proceedings began for Donald Trump. And that's where all of the oversight begins in our system of government, is in the House of Representatives, where McCarthy and these 20, and they had this kind of this circus, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Judiciary Committee is the most powerful committee, in my opinion, our organization's opinion, is the most powerful committee to exist in our system of government. Its oversight, in combination with this select committee, have the ability to introduce not only policy changes, but they also have the ability to control the behavior of these executive branches through the appropriations. Because where does the budget begin? It begins in the House.
Yep.
So it's an extremely, just a monumental opportunity. And I think that's part of why this struggle was so important for the American people to see. Because on one hand, the media and those were labeling this as a circus, which on the surface, it certainly looks that way. But underneath the hood, it's such a monumental opportunity for us to work together. And I mean Democrats, independents, and Republicans. Not saying they will, but I'm saying it's such an opportunity, you guys, for our country to work together to make it better. And that's through those two specific things, is the oversight
and
the appropriations.
And there's also the Holman rule, where they can bust a bureaucrat's salary down to like a dollar.
Yes, Aaron, yes.
Dream about that in the local congressional office. There are deep dreams about that. And I don't know of a time that that's ever happened, but I'll tell you what, if you started being able to do stuff like that for cause, not just to be, you know, a jerk about it.
Yes, not for spite, like the January 6th Commission and impeachment.
Where you just make stuff up and then, you know, blame. But if you actually had real stuff, that would be, you know, you color out the outside the lines, you pay. That should be how it goes. You're exacting rules that don't tie to laws, because that happens all the time. And that has to stop.
And that's another key component here, is with the oversight of the Judiciary Committee and the Select Committee's mission, once voted on, and we're going to see if that happens this week, is they're now able to look, because they have such broad jurisdiction, they can look at everything, into everything. And when you read through the resolution to see what they're actually planning to look at, I mean, for me as an American citizen and a part of our organization as a nonpartisan, we're trying to figure out how to fix our system. We've got organizations, nonprofits, that are colluding with these federal agencies to label Americans extreme white anti-government domestic terrorists.
Yep.
Like the Southern Poverty Law Center, for example.
And they've always been so honest before. I don't know what happened.
Right, and we kind of make fun of them.
Because they've always been so dang bad. Well, look at the ACLU. Yeah. They used to care about free speech, and then, well, that all went out the window. Hey, Mark, we have to take a really quick break. Yeah,
yep.
End with the ACLU. People are probably going to need to switch to decaf. we'll be right back. Our guest is Mark Herr with the Center for Self-Governance. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Your name. love you.
Like a burning flame. Yep. Jim Jordan calls your name and you heat up like a burning flame. That'd just be a great committee song right there. Judiciary, the musical. couldn't help it. So
moving forward with this Judiciary Committee, I totally agree. We actually have an opportunity now to make some changes, to start fixing what's wrong. But I think a lot of people are looking back saying, what are we going to do about what's already happened? And these committees don't have any enforcement powers. I mean, they can't, get people arrested, and thank God for that. But I think we have to kind of separate that a little bit, because I'm not sure what's happened in the past. There's a whole lot they're going to be able to do about it.
You're talking about actually getting people to show up and provide evidence?
Well, that, and we all
getting
know
getting them
that,
in trouble.
Yeah, I mean the system has been weaponized, and they've hidden a lot of information. They've, you know, with all this social media collusion, there really isn't anything the House can do about past bad deeds, is there?
Yes. So keep in mind that you and I, we are more aware of things than 6 to 7 out of 10 Americans.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that.
And so you and I can see the systemic problems, right? And we can see the House is going to have limitations. The key, though, for the six, and even we don't need the 6 out of the 10 Americans. We need, essentially we need between 2 and 3 out of those 10 Americans to realize that systemically it's been weaponized against them.
Right.
More importantly is that the hearings are going to stand in stark contrast to the January 6th commission, right? Which is not what got, killed the red wave, right? Which is a whole other conversation, right? They try to blame the red wave on Trump, or the lack of the red wave on Trump and that kind of stuff. But I mean, if we carefully consider this, what happens these next 2 years with the Select Committee and the Judiciary Committee and their ability to investigate and oversight is it's going to continue to expose the weaponization of the system by acolytes of a different form of government who are now operating the controls. And the American people don't know that. You and I know that. We can see that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can also see the problems with the House and their ability to enforce things. But there are things that they can do in terms of the subpoena power and enforcing the subpoena power. There are things they can do related to appropriations. And they're going to have the bully pulpit for the next 2 years. Now, will the media cover it? I don't know if the media is as influential as they were, 4 years ago when they were faking. People have lost their faith, you guys, in the media. It's astronomical drop in faith in what they're telling the American people, and the American people's belief in what they're being told. And so Jim Jordan's credibility is not damaged by the January 6th committee at all. And notice that no one, like when he stood up to nominate McCarthy the second time, I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch his speech, that was epic. In terms of what he said, the three things and what we need to do, blah, blah, blah. The very first thing he said is that the government has been weaponized against the American people. And that is, if I could say, if anything, the border, critical race theory, gun control, healthcare system, the economy, recession, gas prices, those are important to those 6 out of 10 Americans. those 6 out of 10 Americans don't realize that the system has been weaponized to collapse. And so, anyway, just, and when I say collapse, like, it's not meant to serve them. It's meant to exploit their victimization and to cause them to be afraid of the conversation you and I are having right now on this radio show. We get labeled extremist, right? Right wing, domestic terrorists, all that stuff. And Jeffries follows along with that, repeats that language. And eventually it's not going to just be, you know, Democrat and independent and Republican moms being labeled threats, right? Mm-hmm. It starts to affect every American. So I believe that what we're going to see and what we need to do in support of these hearings is super critical that in your communities and for your listeners, identify anybody who's been victimized in their perception by any of the bureaucratic bullying that's taken place over these last years, okay? And then one-page affidavit, write down why it happened and what happened as succinctly as they can, and get it to their congressman or bypass it directly and get it to the select committee. I can't stress that enough how important that is, because what's happening, and here's another way to compete, right? Rather than the House can't really do anything. Yes, they can if they have data. Okay, so what did the whistleblower tell Jim Jordan, right, from the FBI? The FBI is padding its domestic violent extremism cases, right? Well, what happens when the select committee is flooded with hundreds of thousands of instances where citizens have been bullied by bureaucrats in the executive branch of the federal government outside the purview of the oversight committee? Now, compare that to the padded domestic violent extremism cases from the FBI that are being used to justify what Jeffries is saying is we need to focus on national security because of the extremist MAGA people. Now, wait a second.
Yeah.
That data is padded. Well, then, okay, let's compare data and let's see how many thousands of parents were cited, trespassed, or arrested after the NSBA released their letter in September of last year. How many thousands? And where did that data go to? Jim Jordan and their committee need to find that out, because the Department of Homeland Security has a threat reporting system by which the school boards were encouraged to use a threat tag that Jim Jordan exposed from the FBI. Right?
Yeah.
And okay, and now we know there's a whistleblower says they're padding their domestic violent extremism cases. So there's a conspiracy to label Americans, create criminals so that they can make substantive policy changes. And that's really that is the most pressing thing that we can do for our nation right now is to ensure that we show that the data, or let's at least look at the data. I'm not saying that we manipulate the data in any way, shape, or form. But I can tell you from my experience in traveling the country, I have met with hundreds of parents who have been cited in trespass since September of 2021 after the NSBA released their letter. And I know that the state of Utah, the Department of Homeland Security, was testing a threat reporting system. And when they say the word threat, they're simply saying, oh, you know, just send us your parents who were cited in trespass. So they created a criminal so they could create data so they can make the case that we have a domestic violent extremism problem in the United States.
So they could fluff up their stats.
Right, right.
And we need to encourage our fellow citizens who are just trying to freaking live their lives and raise their kids, put gas in their car and buy some freaking baby for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But they're being labeled terrorists or threats because they show up saying, why did you just give my child a vaccine without my consent? Or why did you just give my child hormone treatments without the parent? What's going on? And these people, our parents are like, what are you doing? And then instead they're getting labeled threats. That's the weaponization of government. And thank God, and I genuinely mean that on behalf of our nation, on all Americans, literally for all Americans, that select committee will exist. to study the weaponization of our government against our fellow citizens. Super critical. Anyway, I could talk for hours. Sorry,
no,
I'm rambling.
No, no. That's
your job.
I know in the last 2 years, we've just been bombarded with, you know, the January 6th committee, all these programs or all these hearings, and people, I think, are at a point where they're tired of it. They're tired of hearing all this stuff. They want to move on. Do we run the risk of by bringing a lot of this stuff up, which I trust me, I'm not on this side of the page, but of people going, my gosh, give it a break. Let's move on. We've heard enough. We're tired of all the fighting. I think it does need to be exposed. I think people do need to be, like you said, you know, 6 out of 10 don't know what the heck's going on. I think they do need to know what's going on. But do we run the risk of people just losing interest because it's just another fight?
Yeah, absolutely. We absolutely do run the risk.
Fight fatigue.
Yes, fight fatigue. And the American people are, especially the 6 out of 10, are exhausted.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're exhausted, not so much with the election fighting. They're exhausted because trying to figure out, I mean, I'm looking at the gas prices here. They went down right after the election, right? They dropped down like a buck or something, but they're still pre-Biden highs.
Oh, yeah, we're supposed to feel good because now it's, you know, barely $4 a gallon.
The only thing that made me feel good about gas prices was last Friday we were looking back through some old footage on roll call, and we found a little blurb from a speech that Senator Kennedy did, who is always a crowd pleaser. And he was ranting about the gas prices, and he's like, these gas prices are so high, it'd be cheaper for my constituents to buy cocaine and run everywhere.
Oh, my gosh. Could you imagine? Oh, my gosh. American people, everyone just like,
I bet when these people elected, they're like, we have to. Who else is going to be any fun? We owe the country this. We have to send him back.
No, but we are the frog right now.
Because it's crazy. It's just
boiled.
So nuts.
And yes. with fuel prices, you know, we were flirting with $6 a gallon gasoline, and people were like freaking out, like, what am I going to do? And now it's dropped down to, you know, $3.80, $3.90. I don't know what it is where you are, but in California we're over $4 a gallon again, and it's like, well, gosh, at least it's not $6.
Yeah, people are happy.
It's like, no, we shouldn't be happy with that. It needs to go back to a buck and a half, or, you know, whatever the real price is. That's what's going to make me happy. Not I'm paying under $4. That's still ridiculous.
They're paying 40% to 60% more for milk and other necessary food items for their children. And so they're having to sacrifice decision making about what kind of fun they want to have, or, you know, the American dream stuff. And they're busy struggling, and then they're being treated. And here's the key. I think the key to your question about the fight fatigue is we have to demonstrate to our fellow citizens in our community that somebody is treating all of us like a chess piece, and we're being exploited to be divided from one another unnecessarily, but for some kind of agenda. And this agenda is tied to this weaponization of the federal government. And you can see, you can literally make it clear to them in their community, how many parents do you know that were cited and trespassed for expressing their concern about their children's education or something related to their education or upbringing? How many people do you know in your community have been labeled a white supremacist, and you're like, I've known them for years, and that's not who they are, right? How many people in your community have been labeled, you know, and treated by bureaucrats and by non-government organizations just in the worst way, trying to destroy their livelihoods?
Oh, yeah.
How many of those people? And so our uniting banner here is that this is something that affects all Americans in each of our communities, and that this is your opportunity to bring to the light the people in your community who have been victimized by these things, to pass on their stories, and to be a part of making a difference, especially at the federal level. when it comes to the budget, when it comes to oversight, when it comes to what are they doing. And then for those of you who want to go further than that, right, you're just like, because there's people who are just going to be like, I just want to watch Kim Kardashian. Can we stop? You know,
she's still a thing.
Right? She's a thing, all right.
No, we have to take a break on that one.
Okay,
that's it.
Yeah,
Mark. Forget it.
I need to take a break too.
You said Kim Kardashian. We have to stop. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, we have to stop.
Oh, that's crazy. All right, so we'll be right back. Our guest is Mark Herr from the Center for Self-Governance. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's got the power, and you're so weak, and your frustration will not let you
You're bad.
They could play that at the hearing, too. I'm coming up with a, you know, kind of a playlist for them. the Untouchables. There was a lot of good music back in the day. We had no idea what the application would be currently. It just continues to surprise me on how prescient their lyrics were. Okay. We had talked about the layer cake idea. Is this a bad time for that? It's a bad time for the layer cake thing?
Hey, we talked about Kim at the end of the...
Oh, that's true. I guess
now we can jump into some cake.
We should talk about cake then. That actually does kind of segue nicely. But I thought it was such a good way for people to wrap their head around it, because honestly, if we don't help everybody, you know, or give people an avenue to be productive... they're likely going to be either frustrated and step aside and just shine the whole thing on, or be unproductive.
Right. Well, and be completely frustrated that, you know, the typical comment is, you know, what does my voice, what can that one person do? I don't have time. I hate politics. You know, I in our training, we talk about politics. What is politics? Most people think that politics is just a bunch of evil politics, because who wants political Lyme disease anyway, right? And so we avoid it is our natural instinct. But actually what we're doing right now on this call, and what we do at our home at the kitchen table, we practice politics, just not in the form that we traditionally think of, like McCarthy and the holdouts and Jeffries and the media. Politics starts with ourselves and our those who are closest to us. We use words with strategy to control things, to influence things, right? And when we disengage from the community and society at a large, what we don't realize is that the meaning of words eventually reaches us, like the COVID lockdowns. People are shocked that it actually reached into their home, right? It reached into their business, like the young lady in her salon in Texas, right? She ended up arrested. She's like, I have to open up my salon to feed my kids. And the judge says, I'll drop the charges if you acknowledge your selfishness. You're like, what?
Is that a thing? Since when is that a thing? Selfish.
Yeah, when is that a thing? She's trying to get money for her kiddos. Well, obviously, they assume that, you know, she could send them to the school and they would provide three meals a day. But this idea of what system of government we have and how do you engage with your politics, you have to ask yourself the question, what kind of political cake do you like? You're like, what? there's essentially two kinds of political cakes out there. There's marble cake and layer cake. You think of the marble cake, everything's mixed together when you slice it open. You think of the layer cake, everything is divided and it's separate and distinct. Well, our system of government was designed to be a layer cake. In other words, checks and balances between Congress and the executive branch, which was the question at the beginning, is how do we hold them accountable? What do you do? I mean, they're not going to listen. You know, all those are all symptoms of problems with the system. Problems with the cake. How about that? Right. And so what kind of cake do we want? And then how do we bake the right kind of cake? What does it take to bake the right kind of cake? You have to choose. Am I for marble? I want it all mixed together. I want the federal government and the state governments to, you know, do all this stuff together. Do I want the executive branch to basically run the government, not Congress? You know, that kind of stuff. How do you want it to function? And then the second piece of it is like, okay, do you want to be a part of baking the cake? Do you just want to eat it? You want to have your cake and eat it too?
Yeah, right?
Right. Or do you want to be a part of the baking? And that's where our organization comes into play. We teach leaders in self-governance who want to be a part of baking the cake into our culture. And being a part of this process of having this discussion like we are right now. What kind of cake do we want? Do we want a cake where it's all mixed together and the controls are blurry and you feel like your voice doesn't matter? Or do you want a cake where the lines are clear and distinct and you have choices, levels of government, there's clear, transparent lines of where you need to go to take care of that thing or to be a part of influencing this part? And I don't know if that helps explain it as simply as I can, but what kind of cake do you want to eat and do you want to be a part of baking that cake? And our organization, that's the main reason we exist.
I think that makes a lot of sense, because if people understand the concept, you can put the pieces to it. But what happens is people are all the pieces are thrown at them, but there's no big picture.
Yeah.
And without that,
hitting them every day, right? It's like they're getting bombarded with this nonsense every day. And it's like, where in the world is this coming from? I made a presentation it's on our website, 20 minutes, but it's called The Hidden Man Who Changed Your World. And this guy, essentially between 1902 and 1950s, he created the structure for baking marble cake. And so when you say, well, why are the school board members doing this? Or why is Congress acting like that? It's not because they are the masterminds. It's because their human nature is being exploited. And without self-governance, this is what it looks like, right? This guy is the mastermind, I would say, who implemented the structural changes needed based on our human nature. And we're simply, it's kind of like a karate. We're just simply having our weight used against us. If it's okay, our website, I can give them where to go to watch that if they want to. So centerforselfgovernance.com/3MCF. Four letters, 3MCF. centerforselfgovernance.com/3MCF. There's a 20-minute presentation on the hidden man who changed your world. And it essentially introduces them to this marble cake, layer cake stuff, and where this is coming from. Not because there's like this, you know, cabal conspiracy people in their dark hoods sacrificing sheep, you know, in the middle of the night. No, they just simply believe in a different form of government. Their human nature is exploited, and they're playing the game to maintain their power and control. And so this is what they do. Miriam just said, hey, you know what? I understand their human nature. I don't like the original system of the United States. This is my strategy for converting it. And this guy implemented his – he was allowed to by four presidents of the United States to make all these changes and convert us from the layer cake to the marble cake and then figure out all the recipe ingredients to bake it into our culture.
Mm. I just think that that kind of focus is going to be really, really important, because people are starting to think that, you know, the best source of information out there is, you name it, but, you know, like Steve Bannon's War Room or, you know, all these things, and they have all these choices. And so you kind of get hooked on the personality that you like, and then they tend to be the source. But, you know, I have people send me stuff like that, and I'm like, that's not even real.
So my Q drops aren't the best source.
And there's that. And there's that whole thing.
And I loved your meme you sent me the other day. Was it Buffalo Dude?
Yeah, it was the QAnon Shaman. Yeah. In an overnight vote, QAnon Shaman becomes the Speaker of the House. But they called him Buffalo Guy.
Buffalo Guy, there you go, yeah.
Buffalo Guy is Speaker of the House. And it's like, yeah, well, we're kind of there.
We do have information overload, you know what I mean? And it is hard to siphon through what's valuable and what's just entertainment. Like, I mean, you know, when you're watching a movie, I mean, if you think about it, a movie is disinformation anyway. It's fiction, or it's according to the person who made the film. So, I mean, you're already in, you know, it's affecting your serotonin levels and your entertainment. So, yeah, we gravitate toward those we like. But in terms of, like, truth, you know, you stop drinking water, you're going to die. That's just a fact, man. So, hey, we need to get some water here, too. And maybe every once in a while, let's go meet up at the Waffle House bar, right? Right?
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, right? What's wrong with that? You know, I tell one of my fellow co-founders, he used to go around saying, they would say, would you like a glass of water? He's like, oh, no, I'm trying to quit.
I don't know. So when you get down to, you know, people's communities and their, because you guys do training for that too, right? School boards, board of supervisors or commissioners, whatever your area does. And kind of, how to field those candidates, or basically, give me a sketch on what you lay out for folks in that. Is it before you find the candidate or after, or both?
It's all before, because our focus is on those Americans who are either see the pain or feel the political pain and are trying to figure out what's going on. Like, you know what I mean? They're like Neo in the Matrix. They just woke up. Mm-hmm. And they're like, whoa, what's going on here? You know, my eyes hurt.
I was at a meeting the other night, and the one guy goes, I was red-pilled. He's like, I never take anything pharmaceutical. It's like, okay, you didn't see the movie, did you?
You didn't see the movie.
He was very upset that this guy was taking these pills. It's like, no, because he was trying to get everybody else to do it.
Sure, right? We're you know, again, that just emphasizes this whole thing. Is like, we're trying to communicate with 300 million people.
Yeah.
And, of course, whoever controls the meaning of words, and what the vast majority thinks it means, they pretty much control society. And so we focus our training on those moms and those business owners, who are also moms, like the single mom in Texas. And we focus on, those ranchers or whoever, it doesn't matter. Whether they're Democrat, Independent, or Republican, if they're an American, or even if they're here visiting from other countries, they want to learn self-governance. The first thing is it's the reason they're there is because they're curious about, number one, I see a problem, but I don't know how to fix it. And so if you think about this, it's like when your body has a pain, what's the first thing you do, right? The very first thing you do is you either try to figure it out yourself, and then you find out how much you don't know how your body works. You know what I mean? And so then you go trust the current health system, right? You go put yourself in there and say, hey, I've got this problem, and then will you guys troubleshoot it and fix it for me? No. What we do is we take the average citizen and we say, what's the symptom? And they say X, critical race theory, comprehensive sex education, diversity, equity, inclusion, social, emotional learning, transgender, you know, you just named the laundry list.
Yeah.
They say, okay, what can we do for you? And most of them will say, can you help me fix my pain?
Yeah.
Can you give me an aspirin to take away my headache?
Hold that thought, Mark. We're going to fix the headache after the news. We're going to give people some little news there to make sure that they have a headache. We're talking to we're speaking with Mark Herr from the Center for Self-Governance, and we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People.
Things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with everyone. We'll sing it.
To the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour. It's Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Go up and see them if you're looking for the new John Deere or got an old John Deere needs to be worked on. They can do it all up there. They got a great inventory right now of tractors, implements, mowers, Z mowers. They got a lot of inventory. They're looking to move it. They got 0% financing right now. Go up and see them or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at Pape Machinery.
.com.
There you go. Thanks, Aaron.
You're welcome, Bill. I thought you had me, didn't you?
Yeah.
All right. So we're back with our guest, Mark Herr. And Mark is with the Center for Self-Governance. You can find them at Center for Self-Governance. .com, Mark? I didn't write it down.
Here.com.
Every now and then.
I almost want to sing it.
.com. I know, we do too. I put I put links to your site on our page for the day. Today would be the 8th of January, 2023.
Man, already.
I know, isn't it weird? So we had to roll an archive for January 1st. Just so happened Christmas and New Year's fell on Sunday, so, you know, no engineers. So we haven't been here for a few weeks, and so now we're back doing live shows again. But
awesome.
For people who want to connect with that, maybe don't have a pen, you're driving or whatever you're doing, you can find that online. And just to let people know, too, our archives stretch way back to, like, 2010. You are welcome to do whatever you like with those shows, whatever is helpful for you. If you want to, we also have video on there, too. So some of those shows, Robert ran video on them. If you want to use them for your group, if you want to burn them on CDs or sell them, we don't care. You know, to use them to raise money for your local Patriot group. You can do whatever you like. We're not coming after you. We do this as a service for the public. So please make use of the archives. Robert will take out the free enterprise moments in the shows. And so you have uninterrupted listening, and we hope you make use of it. All right, Mark. We successfully blew through an hour fiddling around and doing some business, but it's like it always goes faster than you think.
Right.
What is something that you just want to make sure that we don't miss? We should start there and then go for it. I know there's like
a
zillion
that's a Pandora's box. But for sure, the first thing that we don't want to miss is that the qualifications for self-government in our culture, they're not natural. They're the result of habit and long training. It doesn't come naturally to you, and it's something that you learn. And this is my experience. I'm talking to myself. These last 13 years, because I got involved in politics by asking that question: what is self-governance, and how do we self-govern? And it was because I was watching people like panicking politics. I think we had a new president. It was the TARP bailouts of 2008, and then President Obama got elected.
Yep. You and I both, I think, had the epiphany at the same time. Like, wait a second, this train's running away without us.
Yeah. And then my next experience was I got labeled a white supremacist. I'm like, what? Huh? And I'm looking over my shoulder like, who are you talking about? You know? And I'm like, so I woke up in this world of politics that just seemed so, it was just so foreign. And anyways, self-governance is that very, I don't want to miss that. It's the key to unlock your success in your personal life, your business life, and then your public, you know, whether it's social or political or whatever. And I believe that politics overlaps all of that. But self-governance is the starting point. I can't stress that enough. Without the habit of and practice of self-government in our culture, our system of government is going to be all direction, left, right, blue, red, and no balance.
Right.
No balance between those who are controlling our system and those of us who are controlled by it. We get left out of the picture. Parents get labeled terrorists. Ranchers get shot in the back. I mean, all kinds of the crazy things.
Right? Well, and people want, they act sometimes like these guys are electing each other. And it's like,
yes,
you know, we have bad representatives, not because they're electing each other, but because they have constituents who elect them. And we can, you know, we can look at the whole election thing. But bottom line, Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters, those are the ones they want term limits for. But it isn't going to help because their constituents like that.
Well, yeah. And their base of voters are trained to receive low doses of information that are quick, and it's like a bag of chips instead of a bag of healthy food, right? They're trained in Skittles. They're not trained in healthy.
Yeah.
And self-governance is healthy. It's hard. It requires commitment on your part to recognize several different principles of self-governance in order to be an effective leader in your community. And our country can't survive without not just the self-governance of doing what I want, the other half of it, the self-governance of governing myself first before trying to govern you. And so that's the, I you asked me, you know, what should we not miss? That to me is always, I come back to that as the very first step in our journey as a nation, as a culture, in your community, in your home, in your business, in your personal relationships. Self-governance is the key. It's the key to unlock success in growing liberty together, whether I'm a Democrat and you're a Republican. It's also
the only way that we ever arrive at solutions, because
correct.
If it's all about I have to have more guys than you have, which, yes, it does come down to that in some things.
Yeah.
However,
yeah.
Things swing just wildly. I like it. So I put your three blue blocks that are on your main, your homepage of your site. And so, like, the vision of your organization, Center for Self-Governance vision, is the advancement of a resilient, stabilized, and self-governing civil society. So unless you're, you know, Antifa and you're just looking for some anarchy out there, who, you know, you should have a difficult time finding somebody who would disagree with that. That should be a problem. And then when it says who we are, I like it. Center for Self-Governance is a nonprofit, nonpartisan educational organization uniquely dedicated to the advancement of, one, a stable civil society. What a great idea. Two, balanced human government. And three, a well-educated and highly participating populace. And
that's the tough
and
one.
And there you go. That's the kicker. So, you know, then, I mean, it's really easy to figure out what you guys are up to, because then you look at the mission. So if you want a well-educated and highly participating populace, it's like, oh, well, what do these guys have? So developing political leaders in the systematic politics layer cake of federalism by increasing your political influence, improving your networking skills, and expanding your personal growth and development. Not by becoming a big bloviating gas bag and pushing everybody around. That isn't actually on the list. I checked. In no place on that list did it say bloviating gas bag.
Yeah, that's right. We don't need any more bloviating gas bags.
No, right? No, we're really full up.
Well,
we should get that as a, like a little logo with like a red circle and a line through it.
Bloviating, no more. Yeah, no big circle, line through it. Bloviating gas bags.
No more bloviating gas bags. You That's just right. stop running. It. We're not electing you.
Yes.
But it's really important because a lot of times, like we saw with the speaker's race, right? We want somebody else. But I'm sorry, what were the choices again?
Right.
Right?
And from a political, you know, learning how to be competitive as human beings, you know, we have our bell curve of participation, as you guys are pointing out. But ultimately, the next piece we don't want to miss after we kind of discuss what is self-governance, how do I do it, is what is our system of government and how do we work together to make it work better? And this is something that spans history. So I'm just going to go back to the colonies for a second in 1600s, Massachusetts. The Puritans, which was a group of, you know, religious folks, controlled the government of Massachusetts. And there's another religious group called the Quakers. And they did not agree on how you should be a Christian. So the Puritans controlled the government. And what they did was they weaponized the government by labeling the Quakers heretics and witches. And then under that condition, they were able to take their property, beat them in public, or worse, execute them, just on the basis that they didn't share the same belief system. And that's what we're facing, and that's the kind of the thing I really want to stress beyond the self-governance here, is what we don't want to miss is that we are in danger as a culture of repeating that history, because it's not just the Quakers and the Puritan paradox. The Spanish did this in the Catholic Church with the Inquisition. The Pharisees and the Sadducees did this with Jesus by yep. manipulating the democracy to release a criminal, and by manipulating Pilate to execute Jesus. So there's nothing new under the sun here, and that's really important for people to realize. By ignoring it, you're not actually making things better in the future for your kids. By participating and preventing the weaponization of labels in government, you are actually doing something for your kids that has spanned human history. It's history and human nature to weaponize labels against our opponents, take control of the government and turn it into a weapon, to take their property, censor them, cancel them, collude with Twitter, right?
Yeah.
To collude with Facebook. You understand what I'm saying? To then weaponize our systems that were designed to protect us, not from being white supremacists, but to protect us from the ravages of being oppressed by white supremacy, or the ravages of being oppressed by elitists who are controlling Twitter. It doesn't matter what it is. It's the same human nature, whether it's Puritans, Quakers, technocrats, or Kevin Kleinsmith, the former FBI attorney in October of 2016, who said, "I have initiated the destruction of the Republic." And he's, like, proud of it, right? And he goes, "I never really liked the Republic anyway." And I'm like, That's not treason. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
But it's indicative of the systemic problem that when you weaponize labels and you weaponize government, it doesn't matter whether it was the 1600s or Jesus or whoever it was. It doesn't matter. It's human nature to weaponize labels and government when you're not self-governing, and it turns into a weapon, and you end up doing some of the things we're doing now to our fellow citizens. And I really encourage, for your kids' sake, participate in stopping the weaponization of labels in government. And they can visit our website /PWOL for more information on how to do that.
Yeah.
Or how to get involved in that.
I think honestly, because people think, oh, I don't want to get involved in that, it's going to take too much time. It's like, yep. Well, when you kind of put that, when the backdrop is all the time you spend worrying about it, being mad about it, shaking your fist at the television set or whatever your medium is, you might as well just get involved.
Yeah.
And
yeah. You're already involved. You just don't know it.
And find a productive way to do it. Yeah. I'm excited. So talk a little bit. Well, dang it.
Well,
got like a minute left again before the break. God bless America.
That's a great song.
But that is. It's a snazzy song. And you're supposed to take your hat off and put your hand over your heart. Just a little
That's
FYI.
Right.
We'll do a little training here.
There we go.
Nothing annoys me more than there they all are, their hats on, sitting down. You're like, no, no, no. But no, the training that you guys do, and you make that available all over the country. You guys do Zoom and travel.
And that's so important because, you know, when you get back to the 6 out of 10 again, so many people, and I would wager to say a lot of people that think they know how it works, they don't know how our government works. They don't know the three branches of government. They don't know what those three branches do. They don't. There's so much they don't know, and so then when they hear these stories in the media, you know, they're flying off the handle, but they really don't understand what's really going on. You know, when we say they're weaponizing the FBI and the DOJ, I don't think they really understand what that means.
That's exactly right. And that's the key, is you can only see it or feel it. And it's not, it's another thing to talk about the theory of it in a classroom, right? But people don't do things because they're just, I mean, there's a few nerds, right? But there's, most people are like, they're not going to do anything until they feel it or see it.
That's right.
And then that has value.
Yeah.
And I can talk about that when we,
well, I've always said that so much of this stuff is not an issue to people until it hits them in the pocketbook. And that's exactly what's happening now is they can't afford gas, they can't afford food, they can't afford housing. It's hitting them in the pocketbook, and I think now is just such a good time to get people involved, get people educated, let them figure out why all this is happening, and step up and get involved.
You can't fix it if you don't know how it works.
Exactly.
Big proponent of figure out how it works so you can see.
Yeah, I love the guys that want to change everything, and they, you know, you ask them a couple of questions, and it's, oh, okay, you really don't understand what's going on here, do
you? Unlikely to be part of the solution.
Exactly.
Got to take a really quick break. We're here with Mark Herr from the Center for Self-Governance. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
And if you ain't going to fight, get out of the way, 'cause freedom makes so free when you breathe red and white and blue. I'm giving all of myself. How about you? And they call me warrior. They call me loyalty.
Would that it were real, and the real world would stop hassling us. So, Mark, if people have a group of folks in their area and they're thinking, you know, we're all mad, but we're not ready. You know, we're not in a position to really make a big change, and we'd like to get smarter about this and be focused. How do they connect up with you guys, and what do they need to do?
First is, obviously, you just go to our website, centerforselfgovernance.com. They can reach us at our office number or email address, and that's listed on the website on the front page at the very bottom. It's just office number, email address. I believe the phone number is 615-669-8274, I believe, and the info at tncsg.org. So as they go through and they look through the trainings that we offer, we're kind of like In-N-Out Burger. There's an animal-style, animal-style menu. You have to know it's there. But
sure.
But the classes that are listed there are what value brings to your community. So, for example, if you are looking to learn about the structure of government, whether it's school, city, county, even your state, there's this other nebulous thing called regional. We have 2-hour classes on each one of those. They can request the class that's best suiting their community. Our leadership and self-governance series is a little bit more involved. There's training exercises, there's prerequisites. You know, go from block one, you do some stuff, you have to accomplish some things, and you graduate that program. That program is our how do you bake layer cake and marble cake back into the culture. It's kind of the higher level. The structure class is more for people who are just like, how does it work? I don't really understand it. And then we're starting to branch out into there's a lot of folks that are joining the political parties. And so we teach just, you know, basic things like Robert's Rules of Order, bylaws, how all that stuff works. You know, if you're going to knock on a door, you know, what's etiquette? There's etiquette there, and how do you respond to certain things? So if they want to learn those kind of things at that level, we teach those as well. And really it comes down to self-governance. We have a foundation in self-governance training that we're going to be releasing by video this year, probably in the next month or two, that is exclusively about self-governance itself. What is it? How do we self-govern from our Center for Self-Governance perspective? And that'll be released within the next month or two, so stay tuned for that. And then our last thing, for those who are in the kind of the faith-based world, we've kind of studied the various faiths and have come up with a biblical origins of self-governance class for those folks from that community that want to understand how it relates to their faith and self-governance. And then the foundations in self-governance, which I just explained, will be released in a month or two. And then our structure of government classes, how does government work for various levels. And then our leadership in self-governance training for those who want to, go a little bit further and develop their leadership skills in their community, whether they get elected or not.
Hmm. Nice. And you guys have, I was just scrolling through YouTube, and you have a bunch of video on there, too.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I just made a documentary called The Final Verdict, Episode 1, the Oregon Trials. And let me unpack that a little bit. So our primary mission is all that training for individuals and empowering them. That's our main objective. One of the waypoints on our journey ended in April 12th, or began, I guess I should say, but I stopped at this place in Bunkerville, Nevada. It's literally the middle of Nowhereville, Nevada. And it was a conflict over land policies between federal agents and ranchers. And on April 12, 2014, it culminated with 19 states worth of people showing up to support this ranching family that had their cows confiscated related to grazing fees. And so there's just this struggle, this epic day where you had snipers on a hill, you had federal agents well-armed, you had protesters with kids, moms, horses, dogs, and cowboys and militia people, and then you had regular people who were just driving on their way through the interstate. You know, they're just passing. So, and you had media. You had everybody. You had America showed up that day. It was epic, you guys. And I wasn't there for the protest because I had a dog in the fight. I was there because my class was canceled, and one of my students said, "Hey, you want to go to this rally?" I called our co-founder, Center for Self-Governance, co-founder Michelle Perkins, say, "Hey, should I do this? I don't even know what this is about." So I didn't have internet, so she researched it, called me back. She's like, "Yeah, you definitely need to go. Make sure you film it. Stay safe. Don't get hurt." And I'm like, "What in the heck are you sending me to?" And it turned into this standoff. Like, they were literally pointing guns at each other. And I'm like, people are going to die. What the hell am I, excuse my language, what the heck am I doing here? Like, what, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I looked over the concrete barrier because I was hiding. I was like, what in the heck, man? These people are about to, they're going to die, and they're not well-armed. There's like 7 people on the protester side with guns, and there's like hundreds of armed federal agents, and they were ready. They were like, wow. And I looked over the concrete barrier, you guys, and I see a deputy sheriff walk in the middle with a colleague of his, And everything from that moment forward de-escalated, and I could not believe my eyes. I was like, everybody from America is here, everything. Regular people, media, armed federal agents, county law enforcement, protesters, militia, you name it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this sheriff walks in the middle, deputy sheriff, and it starts to de-escalate. Everybody goes home. Nobody dies. No one went to prison that day. I got to tell you, I'm just from an experienced guy in the previous military and then the political side of things, I'm like, wow. And so I took my clips and I started using that in our training to show people. I'm like, I don't know how else to tell you the theory. You know how it is, you guys. Like, people like theory and their eyeballs roll back in their eyes, right? And they just fall asleep and they're snoring and they're like, okay, take me to Waffle House Bar. I'm ready.
Exactly.
You know, but I had on video, I had all of it. And so I was using the video. I was showing the federal agents. I was showing the deputy sheriff. And I was showing the angry protesters and the media. You know, I was just showing the regular people who were just trying to travel somewhere. And I'm like, you guys, in my class, this is how the system looks on video. And nobody died. Anyway, people from around the country in my classes were saying, you need to turn this into a documentary. And so, anyway, long story short, I made a documentary called The Governed v. Governing Series, Part 1, The Bundy Standoff. It's on our YouTube channel. It's on our Vimeo On Demand channel. And we made DVDs, so if somebody wants it, they can email us and ask, and we'll just send it to them. That opened up a Pandora's box So these same characters, okay, I don't even know where to go. So I ended up hiring this guy who just got his master's degree in film back in 2015 or so, early 2016. And he agreed to make it. He didn't know anything about anything. And we just did a premiere of Part 3, and he was there as kind of our co-director along with another guy from South Carolina. And we broadcast it nationwide and even reached into Taiwan and Japan with our Part 3. Anyway, so I'm like, Jeremiah is the guy who made Bundy Standoff on our YouTube channel, and he's like, I didn't know any of this stuff. He has his own political background and beliefs and faith and all that stuff, and he's like, I knew none of this. And he was telling his story about making this first film for us, and I'm like, I'm just a witness, guys. And I've gotten labeled, you know, anti-government because I made the film. I've been labeled,
of course,
you know, I'm a domestic terrorist. I'm like, I'm so not that guy. You know what I mean? I'm not going to strap bombs and come kill you because we disagree on something. I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah.
I want to do this. What you and I are doing, I want to do, if possible, with everybody, if possible, figure out how not to do the Puritan Quakers thing. And these same characters, Aaron, they took over this refuge in the middle of nowhere, Oregon, in 2016. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm watching this unfold. These people, someone's going to die this time, and some people are going to go to prison. It's not going to be the same outcome. So I told Jeremiah, we've got to make a film about this. And it was all about this ranching family. They were domestic terrorists and burning fields. And it's a long story. But I got a phone call from the widow of one of the people who got killed at that event. And if you don't know about that story, we made a film called Lavoie Dead Man Talking. And it's about the rancher who was shot and killed. And he tells the story of why he went there. And it turns out, I didn't even know this, he was at the Bunkerville thing in 2014. And I filmed that guy on his horse. I'm like, hey, where are you going? And he wouldn't answer me. I was like,
oh, no kidding.
I was like, what is going on? And then they're taking over the refuge, and I'm like, someone's going to die. And sure enough, he was killed, Lavoie Finicum. And then people went to prison. 27 people went to prison. And I got a call from the widow, and she's like, will you speak at his memorial? I'm like, no way. We didn't support taking over federal refuges and breaking. I'm not anti-government. You know what I mean? And that's how the media labeled these guys. They were anti-government, domestic terrorists, right-wing extremists, white supremacists, hate groups. You name the label. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, they're going to die. People are going to prison. The media is labeling them. She calls me, will you speak at his memorial 6 months later? And I'm like, I don't think so. So But it was one of our board members was in connection with their family somehow, and he recommended that she come to CSG to learn about self-governance and how our system works. And I said, well, and she's like, well, you don't understand. You can disagree with us, but that's okay. And I'm like, it is? What? You're okay with that? And she's like, yes, my husband was not anti-government. I'm like, well, that's not what the media said. You know what I mean? And I'm like, it doesn't look that way when you take over a federal refuge. You know what I mean? That's a terrible strategy if you want to make change. In my opinion, this is my opinion now. I'm talking Mark here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, huh, she's okay with us disagreeing to have a conversation. Huh, that's interesting. And she said my husband was about training people. And I get choked up about this because I went to the board, the CSG board, and I said, you know, they've asked us, and we're not anti-government and everything they got labeled. We're none of those things. And if we go speak, we're going to be aligned with them, right? That's how they're going to be painted. And they're like, well, no, if you're very clear about our position as an organization, that's not what we support. We don't do those things. We have training. We learn how to be self-governing, blah, blah, blah. And so they gave me permission, and I started researching his YouTube channels. And there's 9 hours of his videos on YouTube, and none of them have been taken down. Oh. No censorship. And the reason why is because they want to make sure that YouTube wants to make sure that you know what a right-wing, white supremacist, anti-government person looks like. And so as I was going through his videos, I'm like, huh, well, yeah, okay, huh. And I'm not being radicalized by this guy. I'm like, this is not what the media said about the guy. What the guy's saying and what they're saying, they're not matching. And I'm telling the board, and we're communicating back and forth, and I'm like, what they're saying, what the media said about this guy and what he said is not the same thing. So I prepared my speech, and when I got there, I meet the family, and I'm like, I'm asking them hard questions, like white supremacy and anti-government, domestic terror. I'm asking them all that stuff, you know what I mean? And I got to tell you guys, that family is nowhere close to anything that they were labeled. Nothing.
No.
Not a single label applies to that family. 12 kids, 40-plus grandkids, 60-plus high-risk foster kids that they were authorized and licensed to care for as a family. That's a hell. They're a hell of a family. Excuse my language again. That's a hell of a family.
Yeah. Well, we don't like hell, but we like saying it.
I get emotional about it because I'm radicalized by anything about taking over federal buildings and being anti-government. Not even close.
No, but when you see people pushed to a point where they do something that upends their life and that of other people, it's like, okay, there's got to be a better way, but they felt like they didn't have any choices.
Yeah, and that's the same way that some of the grassroots people of Black Lives Matter feel too, like Angelique Kearse from Brooklyn, whose husband died in the back of a police car, and he was begging for help on the video, and he died at the hands of law enforcement. And I introduced Jeanette Finicum and Angelique Kearse together, and they both looked at each other, and they're like finding out that neither one of them are what they thought they were. And I'm going to come back to the memorial. I read my speech. When I got up to speak, I said, I love the federal government. We need the federal government. I'm not anti-government. And I kept reading my speech, and people started booing me and walking out and rolling their eyes, and Jeanette and her 3 daughters were weeping. And it was at that moment, you guys, I realized the media had labeled this guy white supremacist, anti-government, hate group, domestic terrorist, right-wing extremist. And the supporters were walking out on his very quotes. Those were his quotes. I was quoting him. And this really taught me a huge lesson about our culture, that we really need to take the time to find out what each other means as a culture. What do you mean, you know, Lavoie Finicum, Angelique Kearse? You know, what do you mean, Aaron? You know, we don't take that time anymore. We just become chess pieces.
Nope, it's like find the label, slap it on, and then put you in the box.
Well, yeah, there's two camps. You know, you're in one or you're in the other.
And if you try to talk reason, you're a rhino, this or that.
Yeah, you're all, you name it. And I was looking at these weeping women. There's 3 daughters and Jeanette Finicum, and I'm looking at them going, and the family has to pick up the pieces.
Yeah.
And so I went to Jeremiah, the director of Part 1, the Bundy Standoff, and I said, you know what? I think we need to scrap the entire what we were going to do, the way we were going to make the film, and I think we should make the film about Lavoie Dead Man Talking. And that's what we did, 4 episodes, and he tells the story from his YouTube videos. He tells the story why he went to Bunkerville in 14, why he was having a conflict with the BLM and the FBI and the sheriff and the Cattlemen's Association in 2015 in Arizona, and why he went to Oregon in 2016. And then in his own words, you literally have him up to the moment that he's killed in his own words in our film. And this has been a way of helping this family, the Finnecombe family, pick up the pieces, because they just wanted America to know who this guy was,
right,
and let him tell the story. And I'm like, and yes, people did die. People did go to prison. That's what Part 3 is about. And that's what our premiere was the Oregon trials, everybody who went to prison after Lavoie was killed. And they tell the story of what happened to them in prison. And you get a picture of the criminal justice system that our side doesn't understand, like Black Lives Matter. And I'm not talking about the organizers who are using them as chess pieces.
Right, talking
about the Angelique Kearse pieces.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They've been trying to say for decades about the criminal justice system and how they're being disproportionately affected and stuff like that. And it really brings it into picture that this is our opportunity. And I tried to stress this on our premiere nationwide. We had Epic Times, New American, NTD, Jeanette Finnecombe streamed it from her website. So we had thousands and thousands of views. It was crazy how many people viewed and got to hear this story. And it wasn't about justifying what they did. That was the amazing part.
It was about telling the story of how they got there, right? Like,
yes.
Like how you wind up in that spot that you never intended to be
and
in.
What the outcomes were.
We have to take a really quick break, Mark.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry.
No. I was just going to say, this one, they didn't go to jail and nobody died. And this one, people died and went to jail. And this is what happened after the fact. And this is our system of government. And I asked the question at the end of the film, what is your final verdict? I asked whoever's watching the film, what's your final verdict? Do you want innocence until proven guilty or guilty until proven innocent? Like the Puritan Quaker paradox. They literally would drown them, and if you died, you weren't guilty. Well, that's a great way to end.
Bonus.
Yeah.
Right? Bonus.
Yeah.
That's kind of the genesis of the films.
Veering back toward, say, I grew up in the East, and Salem Witch Trials, you spend a lot of time on that when you live right near there, and it is interesting, the parallels, because you see it. You see that mob mentality on both sides. Mob mentality is bad. I don't care who's having it. Nobody's mob is better than somebody else's.
Whether it's Jesus or the Puritans, you got it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, really quick break. We'll come back. Our guest is Mark Kerr with the Center for Self-Governance. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
And I can never understand why. Dirt and grease on his hands, driving home at sundown, making just enough to get us by. When I left home, I swore I'd make it rich some other way. I didn't know where I was going, but my dad would always say, pray out loud, make us proud, and son, don't forget where you come from.
People just like you. My hair's turning white, my neck's always been red, colors still blue. We've always been here, just trying to sing the truth to you. Guess you could say we've always been red, white, and blue.
And isn't that the point, right? Not what
I just want to keep playing it, man. I'm like, yes.
I know.
Cut me off.
And go to the Waffle House bar.
Yeah, we need to. We're due. We're all due for another Waffle House episode that doesn't involve the chairs. They probably now have the benches that are glued to the floor. Yeah, they're like, we're not going to have those loose chairs anymore. That's a huge mistake. Well, and then since you've done this film, I would imagine the January 6th thing is beckoning.
Oh, yeah. Well, the overlap is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, just because they went from 27 arrestees arrested in the 2016 to 960 plus because of the so-called January 6th insurrection. I don't know if you guys are seeing the breaking news in Brazil, but the Bolsonaro supporters have stormed their capital, et cetera. And the media here in the U.S. is, you know, yeah, it's just January 6th and Trump and supporters and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, if that was the case, you guys, then the people that were coercing and intimidating Supreme Court justices over the Dobbs decision would have been arrested and have pretrial indefinite detention as well. But because it's related to those who are controlling the system and have weaponized those labels, those people haven't been arrested, right? But the January 6th people, because you were trying to coerce and intimidate the election results, that's a lot more serious, not as serious as intimidating Kavanaugh or Gorsuch or whatever at their homes, or Barrett at their homes, trying to intimidate their decision regarding Dobbs. That's not as serious.
No, you know, no. That's it's against the law, but we don't need to enforce that. It's not that important.
And that's the point of our films, is that equal application of law should apply to all Americans.
Yeah.
Not some, and not for very disproportionate reasons. And I think that's kind of the case that people like Angelique have been making for decades, is that disproportionate application of the law is a problem in our justice system, and we're trying to make that case and bring that dialogue and discussion to the table through these films. Mm-hmm. That we need to sit down at the table, and it's got to affect all. It has to be applied to all. And that's
I just think we're in such deep trouble right now with the FBI and DOJ getting away with what they're doing. And I think our inability to stop that or reverse that course, I mean, it can be done, but at what cost?
It just makes people feel like they're drifting.
It's not equal justice anymore.
No, and I don't think anybody, you know, even if you were on the other team, you could show how your guys really got away with all sorts of stuff.
Well, and that's kind of the takeaway from this, is that to be self-governing is to realize that if you give me the controls of government and I become addicted to that influence and control, I'll become the very thing I hate, even though you like my policies.
Yep.
And so that's the one piece, I think the one ingredient that we want to bring to the table to the American culture in this conversation is the system matters because it's supposed to be designed to prevent the growth of the slow growth of oppression and the frequent and increasing intensity of chaos, and to balance those two things. So I feel like our films have been, I mean, it was amazing. Our premiere, it was amazing to have our directors on there, to have panelists who had been involved in those things, and the conversation that we had. Some of it was kind of off the rails into conspiracy land, but it was okay because it's okay for us to have those stinking conversations.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I learned from Jeanette, was that we can disagree. It's okay. You know what I mean? And that really helped me kind of break through on people can say I'm aligned with them and I'm an anti-government thing. And that's not my point at all. It has nothing to do with the point of the story. It's that we need to come to the table and figure out how to make the system work better for everyone.
Yeah.
And whether it's the issues, that's one thing, but the system itself is another thing. And I'm excited. I'm actually encouraged, quite frankly. I am very optimistic because of the number of whistleblowers that are popping up from the DOJ and the FBI. What this select committee does in terms of bringing light to the non-government organizations that are colluding with our federal government to weaponize labels. And I think it brings us to the table, those of us who've been victimized, regardless of who you are, your opportunity to create a one-page affidavit of why it happened and how it happened to you, as succinct language as you can, and get it to your congressman and send it to this select committee. because it's not just, you know, we might, you know, if you lean one way, you say, well, it's affecting me more. Okay, fine. But we don't want it to affect anyone in this way, right?
Well, I think
that's the key.
Because everybody can't fix it like John Duarte did. You know, crushed by the Army Corps of Engineers for all those years and all the fines and all that stuff. So he decided to run for Congress.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to have a lot of fun with his oversight responsibilities. But not everybody can go at them like that. And I know you're in Washington, and your guys are as crazy as ours. So between the federal government and the state government,
we're worse than you guys.
You think?
But you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. We're superiorly worse. But you know, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm making a joke about, well, who's got it worse than the other,
but
you know what I mean?
But the thing is, when your state government doesn't offer you any sort of relief, and they're coming after you the same way the federal government is, people who live in those states are kind of losing their grip.
Well, you shouldn't be afraid of your government, and
no,
we are in that position right now where we're going to have to choose a hill to die on, and you will die on that hill because our government's not helping us.
Well, the good news is if we all stand up at the same time, they can't get us all.
Well, remember these key things. We had the largest turnover in U.S. history in school boards.
Yeah.
And we're talking moms and dads across the United States. Number two, you have the Judiciary Chairman, Jim Jordan, received our paper in 2019 on the political weaponization of labels by one of your county chairmen who just recently passed away last year. And I'm going to give his name because it's because of him that the paper I wrote on behalf of Center for Self-Governance regarding the weaponization of labels, which is on our website /PWOL, four letters, PWOL, I wrote a paper. It's a 68-page paper, and I am, let's just say that Jim Jordan read that paper, and the entire basis, the seed that we planted, that our government has been weaponized is based on the content and information from that paper and many other things. So we're not taking any sort of 100% credit. What I'm crediting is Don Dix. He just recently passed last year. Riverside County GOP chairman. Was at a fundraiser, and he's on the phone with me, and he goes, "Mark, I'm standing next to Jim Jordan. I have your paper in a manila envelope. Do you want me to hand it to him?"
No, I want you to put it in the mail.
Yeah, send it through the gatekeepers.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's a no-brainer, Don. And he's like, I just wanted to make sure with you first, Mark. Do you want this to happen? I'm like, Don, this is a no-brainer. It is so critical that somebody understands the mechanisms and the infrastructure for weaponizing labels, because it's not just happening in our lifetime. It's happened throughout human history. And that's true progress is when we stop it. That is progressivism. To stop what human nature does and repeats over and over again. When I get in charge and I love my influence more than your liberty,
yep,
I will weaponize government and label you and then take your stuff, beat you, and kill you. Anyway, so Don Dix deserves all the credit. And I know that Jim Jordan has read through that paper because of his language. That language comes from our paper. And I'm not taking any credit at all. What I'm saying is we simply plant seeds, and you don't have to be an elected official to make change. We need elected officials to make change, but you don't have to be an elected official to make change. I can plant seeds in 2019 and watch them bear fruit. And when I read his House Resolution 118, Select Committee on the weaponization of the federal government and the content of what's in there and what they're going to investigate, I had to stop. I had to get on my knees, and in my faith, my personal faith, I had to thank my God and give him 100% of the credit. So Don Dix, God, and we can band together, whether we're faith-based or not faith-based, and we can come to the same conclusions and have disagreements and yet work together to make our system work right. We can literally, I've seen it. I'm I could go on and on. I could almost feel like a preacher at this point. But what I'm saying is that
an
epic moment happened this past Friday night, Aaron. Where
that's awesome.
Premiered,
can you send me the links to that so people can tie in and watch that after the fact?
Yeah, I'll send you the intro. The film. The film is not going to be. We premiered it. We're going to be releasing it.
Okay, we'll add it. How about this? We'll add it when you have it, and we're having you back on. We are out of time. Oh, we gotta run away. But thank you so much for coming on with us, Mark Kerr from the Center
Absolutely,
for Self Governance.
Absolutely, guys. It's been great. I've enjoyed connecting.
Thanks.
Waffle House bars next time.
Absolutely. We'll talk again soon.
For good.